Hot Tech with Jan Vermeulen from My Broadband.
Jan Vermeulen, how are you?
Good afternoon. I'm well. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
I very badly want to know about it.
Like, do we discuss Eskom? Do we talk about data? Do we talk about Netflix? What are we going to start with?
Yeah, I think the place to start is perhaps with Point Topics' latest report, which showed that South African fixed broadband prices are some of the most unequal in the world. And what exactly that means, the word unequal has got itself a very bad connotation in recent years, and so the broadband prices being unequal sounds like a horrifying thing, but it's very interesting to see how this inequality manifests itself, especially when you compare South Africa to some of the other countries on the list. So what Point Topic does, just to give everybody some context, is they look at a bunch of countries, and then they rank 82 countries in this case, and then they rank the price of broadband in each of those countries by normalizing the average price using purchasing power parity data from the World Bank. And so what happens is, if you look at the median tariff, so there's a subtle difference between a median and an average. Which I don't want to waste too much time explaining. I just want to tell you that there is a difference. But so when you look at the median, South Africa is 66th out of the 82 countries in terms of median broadband prices. The average, we are 67th out of the 82 countries. But when you look at the entry-level price of broadband in South Africa, we are 8th out of 52 countries. So our entry-level broadband prices are much lower than the average, whereas our high in broadband prices and our average is just higher than most of the countries on the list. And so the other country that's even that's worse than us in terms of this huge gap between the cheapest and the most expensive broadband, fixed broadband services in the country is Poland, whereas the best countries in the world are countries like Venezuela, Iran, and Ukraine, and Russia, Romania, Japan. Those are the top five. And it's actually very interesting to see the Ukraine as an example, because it's just the lowest across the board. It's super interesting to see. The Russian Federation as well, similar kind of situation, where Ukraine is ninth in terms of average price, third in terms of median prices, 12th in terms of entry-level tariffs, and so it just does quite well. Whereas Venezuela...
Jan, I've got to stop you because you lost me. I do not understand. Just
you
give
lost
me
with median.
a concrete example. So I'm going off, right, and I'm putting a broadband line into my house. Am I being ripped off?
Right. So it depends, right? So let's say you put in a broadband connection into your house that's a gigabit per second.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if anybody has an idea how fast that is. On that end, we are more expensive than
developed
countries, right? But if you take a 4 megabit per second or even a 1 megabit per second, I don't even know if those exist anymore, connection, like a DSL connection, but like the...
So for the rubbish connection, we're very cheap, and for the super duper deluxe one, we're very expensive.
Right. And so,
got it.
And so what I'm trying to just explain, with this data is that, in Venezuela's case, for example, it ranks first in the world across the board, average, median, entry level. But also there is no difference between the entry level and the high end package. It's all the same.
So
everybody gets the same cheap broadband. So like that's the one thing that the statistics hide, is that, you can get places where broadband is really cheap, but it might not be that good. But you have no choice.
So where in the world are you getting the best broadband for the cheapest price?
So can I just stop, because my kids both live in Israel.
Yeah.
For 30 shekels, which is the equivalent of 90 rand, they get high speed, and it's really, really fast there.
Israel is ranked third in the world.
Unkept, unshaved, unlimited.
Really,
for 30 shekels, that's equivalent of 90
rand.
Well,
it's a bit more now. Now we're at, 120, but even then,
because
that's
the rand's
cheap.
Gone down, but yeah. the prices haven't gone up. It's still 30 right. shekels.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, Israel is placed third in the world in terms of the average and in terms of the entry level tariff, so their cheapest package, is they're 30th in the world. So Israel is really incredibly good in terms of global standings.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Once we're talking about data, what is this about not being reimbursed for data that you're losing during, you know, power failures and
electricity failures? Electricity service delivery failures, as you call them. I like that term. So this is specifically when we're talking about daily bundles. So people say buy a bundle at the start of the day and then they get load shed and they can't use, they feel that they can't use up their bundle, during the day. And so there's some folks are saying, you know, this is unfair. We should be getting refunds on days like that. And so the mobile operators saying that unfortunately they can't, you know, when the fault is their own, they're happy to help customers out. Vodacom actually saying that they take it on a case-by-case basis. But for the most part, the mobile operators are saying, you know, they just can't refund people on load shedding days because this is out of their control.
They would be subsidizing Eskom, and that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, well, yes. And also some making the argument that, you know, you're not load shed for the whole day, or you're, you don't have an electricity failure all day. There's a schedule. And so, you know, for say 16 hours of the day, you are able to use that daily data bundle. And so, yes, it's unfortunate that, you know, let's say your power goes off, between 6 and 8 at night, which is precisely when you wanted to use it. And that sucks. You could use that data bundle any other time during the day if you wanted to.
Yeah. And you've got a headline which really caught my eye. It's new streaming service with SABC shows to launch in South Africa. Is that for real?
Yes, this has been a discussion for some time, whether it's actually going to happen. It's got a name and everything now. And so I remember speaking to the former head of Centex, Situmo Mohapi, about this. He's at CETA now, years ago when I had almost just started at my broadband. This is like almost 9 years ago now. And there was a lot of talk about this BBC iPlayer that was happening in Britain and how it gave free access to the free-to-air shows that the country developed. And I wanted access to Doctor Who as an avid sci-fi fan. Obviously, that didn't happen in South Africa, unfortunately. But this has been something that's been in the works for a while now. But what's interesting is that they're going to be charging a subscription fee for this. The terms and conditions on the website list the following prices: a daily price, 5 rand, weekly price, 20 rand, and a monthly price of 69 rand, to use this service. And that's definitely not how BBC iPlayer works. The cost of that is covered by the British government through their taxes. So obviously we know that our state-owned enterprises are in dire financial straits thanks to the plundering of corrupt politicians, the Guptas and others. So it's unfortunate to see this kind of stuff being monetized like this. But that's the reality of it, I guess. They're looking increasingly at the new reality, which is online streaming, and they're going, you know, we're not going to be able to charge TV license fees. People are increasingly not paying their TV licenses in protest. And so they're going to charge for this service. We'll see how far that gets them.
Firstly, I'm absolutely shocked at how many people are canceling their DSTV contracts. That is unbelievable. It's like
DSTV premium, definitely, yes.
It is unbelievable. Anyhow, moving on. What was the story with NetFlorest?
NetFlorest, this was so rough for them. I feel kind of bad for them, but also, I mean, it's a company. They need to roll with the punches. Where they had this massive campaign leading up to Valentine's Day to get people, you know, to buy their NetFlorest thingy, and then they get free Lindt chocolates and everything to go with it. And on the day, they couldn't make all their deliveries. That's rough. That's even worse than a black Friday mess up. If you don't deliver, if you're a florist company and you don't deliver on Valentine's Day, that's, you know, that's huge. And so the CEO published a video on YouTube taking full responsibility. Well, I say taking full responsibility. They said, we failed you, and then offered an explanation, which is that they just did not account for the traffic problems that load shedding was going to cause on the day. And I can attest to that. I was in Cape Town at the time. The traffic was a nightmare. And in Joburg, I'm sure it was the same, on the 14th, thanks to the load shedding. And they said that they worked over the weekend to try and fulfill all the orders, and they will do whatever it takes to make this right.
It's a little late when we've broken up already because she was upset that she never got flowers.
Listen, can I just say that a woman who is not going to forgive a mistake like that, your relationship's in bigger trouble than you realize. Sorry. If you're depending on those flowers or that whatever.
Isn't that
perspective?
Yes. But they said that they made about 90% of their deliveries. But the fact is, to those 10% that they failed, it was a huge deal because it was a big day. And so they said that they're gonna do whatever it takes to make that right.
Very interesting. Jan Vermeulen, wonderful, wonderful to speak to you. I actually came across something that I thought that would actually interest you.
Yes.
Jan, do you know about the Voyager Golden Record?
You're talking about the record that's actually on the Voyager space probe that's heading into,
yes.
or that's already headed into interstellar space, right?
Yes. It's absolutely fascinating. Do you know about it, Simon?
A little bit, yes.
So this was something that was put together in the 1970s by, you know, world governments. And they recorded different things. It's a record of humanity, should any extraterrestrial life come across this. Why we assume that extraterrestrial life would be more intelligent is, that's another discussion.
Sure.
But what is on here? So it's called the Voyager Golden Record. It contains 116 images of life on Earth, plus a calibration image and a variety of natural sounds. So they've recorded a whole lot of sounds that they've put on this, such as surf and wind and thunder and animal sounds, and including the sounds of birds and whales and dolphins. Isn't that amazing?
That's
and pictures
beautiful.
Of human beings and of daily life and culture. And it's just incredible. They say hello and they do greeting in 55 languages. And there's, and of course, maths and geometry is a universal language. So they've included calibrations of that, that if you are able to work out whichever life form happens to find it, if a life form does, and they can work out that sum equals the circumference, then they know that they're on the right track, and that becomes the mutual language. It is unbelievable. So Jan, if you were putting together a time capsule, what would you add in a time capsule?
Ooh, yeah, that's an interesting one. Because, you know, you want to give a slice of the times, but also something that's quite timeless.
Yes.
So I would put in something that's quite, that's uniquely South African, if I can, and also something that needs to, doesn't need, you know, like biltong isn't going to work because that's going to perish eventually. I would look at possibly a vuvuzela.
Or some gluten-free bread. That will never perish, apparently.
So something that's uniquely South African, and then something, you know, that's sort of more, you know, general to humanity, which will be a difficult one. And then maybe, yes, exactly like this, a selection of music from the time, and then some of my personal favorite hobbies, like video games. Some of the video games that I enjoyed playing.
What video games would you put Tetris?
Tetris is a great choice for a sort of timeless video game, and then for something that's more contemporary, I might have something that's a little bit more violent, but that I find very entertaining, like Warframe. And Minecraft,
Minecraft
are good examples of video games that I think would stand the test of time in a time capsule.
Fabulous.
What an amazing question, eh?
What would you put in, Simon?
Probably recipe for carrot cake or something. Something that gives me immense joy.
maybe a slice of wedding cake, because apparently that never goes off. Right. Do you remember in the olden days, parents used to go to a wedding and they used to always bring you back, I don't know if your parents
little
did.
Squares.
Little squares. Yeah. And they were all individually wrapped and you were supposed to sleep with it under your cushion. Did your parents ever do that, Jan?
No, but my parents-in-law tell a wonderful story about their wedding cake, because it was tradition to keep one of the layers of the cake, and then you eat it a year later on the first anniversary of your wedding. And they got to their first anniversary, and they cut into it, and it was completely empty. It was just the icing shell.
Oh, my God.
It had been eaten out by ants.
Oh, so it wasn't that they were ripped off.
No, the ants had devastated their first anniversary gift, yes.
Oh, shame. Well, listen, from the sounds of things, their marriage survived. And again, you know,
net florist problems there.
Yeah, Pamela, thank you so much and have a wonderful week. Look forward to speaking to you again next week.
You too. Thank you so much.
Cheers, Jan.